I am so excited to see you here today. It is our second week of our series called Life You Didn't Expect. And it's all about times when you were not ready. Things happening in life that you did not want to happen, didn't plan to happen. Ernest Hemingway wrote something that stuck with me. He said, "The world breaks everyone, and afterwards, many are strong at the broken places." That's not a Christian quote. Hemingway is not quoting theology, but he stumbled onto something deeply true, and if you've lived long enough, you know exactly what he means. The breaking is not the end of the story. For a lot of people, the breaking is actually where the story begins. I heard a story about a guy who self-described it as the worst week of his life. On Monday, his car wouldn't start. On Tuesday, he found out at work that the promotion he'd been working towards for 2 years wasn't going to happen. On Wednesday, his kid got sick, and he spent most of the night in the urgent care. On Thursday, he got into an argument with his wife. It started about dishes and ended up about everything else. And on Friday, he locked himself out of his house. And at 9 p.m. on that Friday, he stood on his front porch and looked up and said to no one in particular, "I'm done." He told someone later that what got him through that week was a phone call from his dad. And his dad didn't fix anything, didn't come over with a key or fix his car, didn't have a bunch of solutions. But his dad said, "Son, I've been right where you are, and I know you'll make it through." That was it. And that was enough. There's something about knowing somewhere else has been where you are that changes what you think you can survive. And that's not just advice from the pulpit. That's just not TW advice. That's actually in the Bible. That is the argument in Hebrews 11. But before we dive in to the scripture, I want to take a moment. I want to invite Michael Murphy up here. If you give him a round of applause. In fact, the ministries that Michael has been a part of are the ones most people would prefer not to be a part of. Some are even ones people actually actively avoid. So you've been called repeatedly to difficult places, difficult situations, difficult seasons. Let me give everybody a brief rundown. Correct me if I get any of your details wrong.
I will.
So Michael spent 2 years as an interim pastor at a tiny Nebraska town of 85 people, and he ministered to a community where almost the entire population, all 85, struggled with significant mental health issues. Then he served 3 years in youth ministry in Illinois, and while he was there, there were so many people that were living in food poverty that he helped start a food bank that is still serving today. After that, he pastored in Oklahoma for 5 years. He launched, saw the community needs, saw that the church had the ability to help the people around them, so he started a biannual mission trip into their own community. And that is still happening in that church, that community right now. Then came 7 years in Kansas City. Now, the first service, I called it a church planter. And you said that was generous.
We use church plant lightly.
Yeah.
It wasn't a traditional church. We call it a non-traditional.
A non-traditional home church.
More like a community.
Deal. Okay.
Intentional community is the word.
But perfect. But he worked with homeless people, with at-risk individuals through practical ministries like basic car repair and maintenance, helping them with land bank home renovations, even being a special advisor to the school board.
Yeah, I didn't want to run for the school board, so I just helped him out.
Perfect. Now, then most recently here in Texas, you served for 2 years as the program director at a church camp that needed but didn't necessarily want fresh leadership and new life. So that is a lot of moving for you and your family. It's a lot of different states you've lived in. It's also a lot of emotionally heavy ministry time. A lot of pouring yourself into work that you may never see the fruit on this side of heaven, and you're only 42. So through it all, there's been this steady stream thread of faithfulness. So I guess my question to you is, in the Bible, there is, in Hebrews 11 especially, there's a list, we're calling the Hall of Fame, which you like to call the...
Hall of Faith.
Hall of Faith. But which of those people do you feel their story, their conviction, their life helps you stay faithful and helps you stay steady?
I think there's a lot, and I think the most is probably Abraham, and I think the best way to understand that is the first time we went to Ennevale, which was the small Nebraska town. It was 3 hours away from school. Church started at 9. My wife's not good at getting up in the morning, so that was interesting. And we pull into town. You know, we grew up in Round Rock, and I thought that was small. And, you know, you drive into town, it says the population, and on Ennevale it just says unincorporated. It doesn't even have a number. But we pull into town, and there's a goat on the roof of a house, and it's eating the shingles. And we thought, what are we doing here? This is crazy. And that was really kind of the entire town in like a nutshell. But I say that only because that church was unbelievable to be a part of. I learned so much as a preacher and ministry. And 100% of the attenders were tithers. 100% showed up at every event that we did. 100% showed up at any type of outreach that we would do. At least half were schizophrenic, and so I learned things like you can't ask rhetorical questions on stage when there's a group of schizophrenics, because if you ask something like, what sin are you dealing with this week? They will answer, and they will answer in graphic detail amongst everyone. So with Abraham, I think it's really important to see where God asked him to sacrifice his son, but also the promise of he will be the father of many nations, and those two had to go together. And as I see that, and then Hebrews definitely looks at it, is that he was totally prepared to sacrifice his son and that he would be brought back from the dead, but didn't necessarily understand what that entailed, what that would look like, how that would work. And so he was ready to do it anyway. When we went to Kansas City, I'm a planner. I plan everything. I have spreadsheets upon spreadsheets upon spreadsheets. And I had planned all these things out. And when we got there, I realized I had no idea why he was calling us to Kansas City and how much I had to learn to be prepared to help the people there. And that's where I kind of realized a quote from Shane Wood at Ozark that the opposite of faith is certainty, not doubt. And that you don't have to understand everything. In fact, you won't, because he's infinite. That sometimes just following what he's asking you to do will allow you to do bigger things than you imagine. Because as soon as it becomes logical, it's no longer about what he's asking you to do. And that doesn't mean that makes it easier or less confusing. In fact, I find it very much the opposite. Here at the last job, I was very excited. I feel uniquely qualified to do that. And then I couldn't breathe while I was there. I was deathly allergic to something at the camp that ended up injuring me physically, and I'm still confused on why I was called to do that. But just recently, like within the last 2 weeks, there's been some seeds that have started to grow that I planted that are, I don't know about exciting. I don't know how big they're going to get, and I don't know that that's the point. But the point was that I tried to be faithful. And that with Abraham, I think it's really revealing that the angel says, we want you to do this. And he says, no, I ain't going to do that. That's crazy. No. He doesn't say, well, is there another way to do it? No, it actually says the opposite. It says he got up very early in the morning. And I like to think of that, my own part, not like in the Bible, that he was so excited to see what God was going to do with this story that he was ready to get going. And it didn't have to make sense, and it didn't have to understand what everything was going on, but he was excited to see what God wanted.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Yeah. But I want to, give him another hand, absolutely. Let's pray, and then we'll dive into Hebrews 11. God, thank you so much for church. Thank you so much for community. Thank you so much for the diversity you've given your kingdom. I thank you for Michael and his family, their willingness to go places that others don't want to go, do things that other people are praying not to have to do. And I thank you for their faithfulness. And I pray that we can all have that same faithfulness, Lord. It's in your son's name, amen. Thanks, brother. Thank you. There is a Japanese art form. I'm going to put this every week. I'm putting this on stage. I made this one. So y'all, I mean, look, you may not like it. I love it. There's a Japanese art form called kintsugi, and it takes a piece of pottery that's been broken, and instead of throwing it away and hiding the damage, the artist repairs it with gold. Liquid gold fills every fracture, and when it dries, the broken places become the visible part of the piece, not concealed, but highlighted. The philosophy is that breaking an object is part of the object's history, and that history is worth honoring. And the writer of Hebrews 11, what he's doing is essentially kintsugi. He is taking broken people who are scared, who doubted, who waited, who suffered, who sometimes failed. And he traces the gold through their cracks. He's saying, look at these lives. Look at where they broke. And look what God did in the broken places. That's where we are. We're in week two of the Life You Didn't Expect series. And last week we established that life doesn't always cooperate with what we want. Doesn't always cooperate with our plans. We established that. Today I want to talk about what we do with that reality. Specifically, what to do with the breaking. You make a plan and it breaks in ways you didn't expect. I have an interesting story about this, personal experience. Oh, man. When I was 17... I lived in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, or thereabouts, and there was an old tobacco warehouse that was kind of in the middle of the city that they were going to tear down and build a Home Depot or something. My dad had some connection to a guy, and he said, they're going to bulldoze this thing down, so if you want any of the lumber out of there, come and get it before they doze it. My dad's like, absolutely, let's do it. So he told me and my brother and my best friend that he would pay us to go down there and start pulling out lumber. So we're pulling 4x6s and 4x4s. We're pulling out cross beams. We're clearing out the staples. We're clearing out the nails. And I would like to say that we created and we accumulated a respectable stack of lumber. All right? Proud of it. About an hour and a half into it, from across the warehouse, a man comes around the corner. This is a huge warehouse, so he is way far away, and he has the energy of someone who just got chased by bees or something. He is on fire, and he is yelling at us. What are you doing? Y'all need to stop. Stop. I already called the cops. Turns out the man who told my dad he could have lumber didn't, in fact, have the authority to make that call. And the man who was overseeing the warehouse under the new ownership didn't appreciate three teenagers in there stealing lumber. Now, it was not my dad's plan to get the cops called on his kid, on his sons, for stealing lumber. But that's exactly what happened. I have no idea what my dad's plan was for that wood, but his plan shattered. Now, my family laughs about that shattered plan now. My mom did not laugh at the time. But what do we do when it's something more important? When it is a life plan that shatters, what do we do when that happens? Starting in Hebrews 11. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, for by it the people of old received their commendation. The writer opens with this definition of faith that is amazing. Faith is not wishful thinking. Faith is not pretending things are fine. Faith is confidence in things you cannot yet see. It's the assurance of things hoped for. And immediately he anchors it in something real. The people of old received their commendation. He's saying, I got receipts. There are witnesses. There are people who have already run this race. What you are going through, what you personally are going through, has a history. And I want you to think about that. Whatever season you're in right now, there is someone in the pages of Scripture who faced something comparable. And it's not just a lesson from a textbook. These are real people with real fear, real doubt, real moments when they didn't know how things were going to turn out. And the writer of Hebrews, he runs through them fast. And I want to slow it down a little bit because I think we also run past this list sometimes just to get through it. I would argue that most people just skim these lines. But these are people, real people. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. Abraham got up and went. He didn't have GPS. He didn't have a 5-year plan. He got a call from God and a direction, and that was it. Go. So he went. Imagine that conversation. Honey, we're moving. Where? I'll let you know when we get there. That sounds like a fun convo, right? And yet Abraham went, not because he had it figured out, but because he trusted the one who called him. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Sarah gets told she's going to have a baby, and she laughed. She laughed because she was old. She knew she was old. She knew what that meant biologically. And the writer of Hebrews doesn't highlight her doubt. He highlights her faith. She considered him faithful that had promised. And a baby came. And here's where it gets harder. I don't want to skip over this part because when we talk about faith, sometimes we make it sound like faith guarantees a happy ending in the short term. That is not what this text says. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. Some of them died without seeing the promises fulfilled. Think on that for a second. They kept the faith, they stayed faithful, and they still didn't get to see the promise fulfilled this side of heaven. Now you might be thinking, that sounds terrible. Why would I sign up for that? That's a valid thought. But don't stay with me here, because the writer's making a point. The faith is not dependent on the outcome. The faith was in the God who made the promise. And that's a very different posture than we usually have. We tend to have conditional faith. I will trust you, God, if this works out the way I think it should. These people had unconditional trust. And that's harder. That's realer. And it's what the writer is calling us for toward. And then in verse 32, he just shoots stuff at us. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets who through faith conquered kingdoms and enforced justice and obtained promises and stopped the mouths of lions and quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Yeah, that's the good stuff. That's what we ask for. Fires stopped, lions mouths shut, wars won. But then the writer keeps going, almost in the same breath. Some were tortured, refused to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and in caves of the earth. Same chapter, same faith, different outcomes. Some of them got the miracle, some of them got the suffering, but the writer calls them all commendable. All of them. All of them received the approval of God, the ones who conquered kingdoms and the ones that were sawed in half. Both. See, the difference wasn't the outcome. The difference is the faithfulness. So where does that leave us? Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. That word that starts therefore and starting in verse 12, that means everything that we just read right before it feeds right up into this text. All of those people, because of Abel and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Moses and Rahab and Gideon and all the rest, because of them, keep going. Keep going. Imagine you're in a stadium and you are surrounded. The World Cup's happening right now. Imagine you're in a stadium and it is packed, and every person in that stadium has already run the race you are in the middle of. The race you are currently in the middle of. They know what it's like. They've felt what you are feeling, and they are not silent. They are a loud cloud, a multitude. And here's the reality I need you to hear this week. You are not running this race alone. You are not the first person to feel like you can't keep going. You're not the first person to face something that felt impossible. You're not the first person to wonder if God sees you in the middle of whatever it is you're going through. The cloud of witnesses is real. The people in Hebrews 11 are real. Their suffering was real, and their faith was real. And the writer of Hebrews is essentially saying, let their story fuel your story. Think about marathon runners. The pastor I heard of, he was running his first 5K. He was not a runner. He signed up on a whim. He trained badly. And he showed up on the day of the race deeply regretting his life choices. Now, I already told you a personal story about me. So if you think that's where this is ending up, no way. I ain't running no 5K. Just putting that out there. But right around mile 2, which he described as feeling like mile 47, right around mile 2, a woman ran up beside him. A woman who had to be in her mid-70s. Full running gear, the visor, the goggles, everything. And she looked at him and said, "Are you doing okay, honey?" He's a pastor. He don't lie. He said, "Not really." She said, "Good. That means it's working." And then she just kind of pulled ahead of him. A 70-something-year-old woman just left him in the dust. He said he was simultaneously humiliated and strangely encouraged. Because she had clearly done this before. She'd been where he was, and she wasn't stopping. And so he didn't stop either. That's the picture of what Hebrews 12 is describing. A cloud of witnesses who aren't judging from a distance with clipboards or comparing your run to theirs. They've already run it. They know that mile 2 feeling. And there's something about being seen by people who've already been where you are that changes what you think you can do. You've probably seen the footage of major marathons, New York, Boston. Thousands of people are lining the streets. They're cheering people on. Strangers are holding out cups of water for the runners, which feels very trusting in my opinion, but that's not the point here. But there are strangers holding out cups of water, and there's families holding signs with names on them. And the interesting thing is, about marathon crowds is research shows that the presence of a cheering crowd measurably affects a runner's performance. Not slightly, measurably. The sound of people cheering increases output. It reduces perceived pain. It pushes runners through walls they otherwise never would have pushed through. And the crowd doesn't run the race for them. The crowd doesn't remove the difficulty. But something about being witnessed and being cheered on changes what the runner is able to do. That's the image the writer of Hebrews is handing us. You have a crowd. And they are not passive spectators. They are cheering. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And then the writer makes sure that we understand who this whole race is oriented around. It ain't the witnesses. It's not the Hall of Fame or the Hall of Faith, depending on whether you talk to Michael. It's Jesus, the founder of the faith. He set it in motion. He is the perfecter of it. He's the one who brings it to completion. And here's the cool part. Jesus ran the race too. He's not a distant God who handed us a course map and then went inside to watch TV. He endured the cross. He despised the shame. He knows what it's like to suffer. He knows what it's like to cry out and what the silence feels like when it's deafening. He ran it. He finished it. And now he's seated His suffering accomplished something eternal. So can yours. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Consider him. When you are faint, when you are weary, when you feel like you can't take one more step, consider him. Look at what he endured. This is not a guilt trip that you don't have to deal with as much as he did. This is not minimizing your pain. This is a reminder that the one who runs with you has already been through worse. And he's not indifferent to your situation. So what's the takeaway for today? You know, I got to give you one. Your suffering, whatever it is you're going through, your suffering is uniquely yours. Nobody can fully understand your specific grief, your specific struggle, your specific loss, your specific guilt. That is real. But your suffering is not unique in the sense that you are not alone in having it. People before you have suffered. People before you have doubted. People have wrestled with God and felt like they weren't going to make it. And some of them made it through, and some of them died trusting. But God called all of those people faithful. The application I give you is simple, but it's going to be hard to practice, I think. I want you to go home this week. And in Hebrews chapter 11, I want you to pick somebody. Pick somebody. Read their story. Read it in Genesis or Joshua or Samuel or Judges, wherever it may be. I got a handout in the back for you that has every one of them listed and the places you can find them in the Bible. There will be no excuses. Choose one. Choose five. Choose them all. That's between you and God. But read the story and find the place in the story where things were not okay, where they were scared, where they failed, where they were having to wait a long time. And notice that God was there. Let that be evidence for your own life. Maybe you're in a season of waiting like Abraham. Maybe you feel past hope like Sarah. Maybe you feel unqualified and scared like Moses did before he's even mentioned in Hebrews 11. Maybe you feel like you're wandering in the desert. You are not the first. And God, and the God who is faithful to all of them, is the same God who's faithful to you right now. One more point of perspective, and I say this not to make light of suffering, but because of your suffering, because I think it's true and you need to hear it. I recognize there are people sitting in this room right now who are in the middle of their story. You haven't seen the end of your chapter yet. And it hurts, and it's painful. But there are also people in this room right now who 10 years from now will look back at your story, at the way that you kept the faith, the way that you ran with endurance, even when it was hard, and it will fuel that person's future faith. You're not just reading the Hall of Fame here. You're becoming a part of it. So lay aside the weight, the heaviness. Not because it's not real, not because the suffering's not real, but because there's a race in front of you and you were made to run it. You have a cloud cheering you on. And at the finish line is the one who endured the cross and is waiting on you. So in the midst of the life you didn't expect, keep the faith.